Season 5, Episode 11, You're Under a Rasta. It opens up with Simone having breakfast and Russell's coming out of the bathroom. And when Simone... First he tells her, hey, you've been using up too much of the fucking bathroom. But he says it in a nice way. He tries to offer her some coffee and she rejects it because she's got herself a positive pregnancy test.
Oh, I didn't even notice the rejection of the coffee.
I noticed it because, like, Simone kind of has this face where he's like... Because it seems like they've done it every day for, like, months, where he hands a cup of coffee to her.
He's like, coffee, my dick. You normally don't say no to those things. So, weird.
She explains how a pregnancy test works for the audience who may not know. She says she's pregnant, and at first it seems like... I don't know about you, but at first it seems like Simone kind of plays that, I didn't think you were fucking serious.
Didn't she make that big proclamation after he came? Like, she was like, I think we just made a baby.
Well, yeah, she did. Right? She did, and then later I think she made like a comment to him that was like, I think we have a baby. He's like, how do you know it? And she's like, oh, a woman just knows. But I think in his mind, he's like, man, just bitches be crazy. They don't know. And then comment to him that was like, I think we have a baby. He's like, how do you know? And she's like, oh, a woman just knows. But I think in his mind, he's like, man, just bitches be crazy. They don't know. And then when she has the positive thing, he's like, oh, shit, it's real.
You'd think that, like, if Russell was able to, like, foresee her being pregnant, she'd be a better detective.
What's wrong with
her? He had this, like, ability to, like, see into the future, know that she was gonna, like, this was gonna get her pregnant. You feel like she'd be a better detective and be able to, like, solve crimes better.
The opening scene ends with her making Simone promise that they're not gonna tell anybody out of superstition. You know, there's some cute bullshit future father banter. Like, I love in movies, and I don't know if this is a real thing, and I just don't know. I love how in movies and TV, after a woman mentions she's pregnant, her significant other has to touch her stomach. Like, they have to.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you're pregnant? Hand on stomach. Like,
but it's like one of the only things that you can do that can show pregnancy without there being a belly. You know what I mean?
It's like, yep, she pregnant. Unless you're in Con Air and you can be Nicolas Cage talking to Monica Potter's stomach in the middle of a bar.
Well, I mean, not all of us are Nicolas Cage.
No, not all of us can bring them the fire like a Nick Cage. Then they get a beeper. They, you know, they get beeped for a DOA to remind you that they're detectives. We're here to remind you, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
They get a beeper.
The first scene that we have after the break, Sipowitz, Simone, Russell, and Kirkendall go to a, I guess it's a house or an apartment? It seems like a house, because they have the basement, and they have rooms upstairs, and they have a room where a guy could live in. I don't know if they have, like, a weird apartment situation where they have multiple floors. Not important.
Yeah, I couldn't quite figure out the layout. Like, if it was an apartment building, I didn't know what was going on.
Because they made it seem like they own the building, and they're letting the guy who shows up live there. I'm not sure, but... What is important that there were two women in the basement lying face down, executed, with an empty safe. While they're investigating the room, a guy named Ronald Anderson shows up, and he's super dramatic, and they clock him as sensitive right away.
That's just code.
That's just code?
Code words. Those are code words.
The DOAs are Wanda Livingstone, who is a wife of a drug dealer, according to Ronald, and her friend Joanne DeMille. And Ronald just keeps pointing at the husband, saying it's probably the husband, it's probably someone the husband knows. He's a drug dealer.
He doesn't lay off the husband. It's kind of annoying.
And I think Sipowitz kind of sniffs out that this guy isn't up to snuff, because he's always, like, challenging everything he says, and, like, questioning everything he says. And at one point, Ronald says, why are you so needlessly callous? Oh, no, why are you so viciously callous? And Sipwood says, that's the way I deal with my continuous grief. After he leaves, they get a phone call to the basement, and the person hangs up immediately when Simone answers the phone. So they run a trace on it to see who that could be. They ask the ladies, because Russell and Kirkendall are there, they ask the ladies, do you think Ronald could have something to do with this? And Russell says, well, I think the DOA was a little too fast for Ronald, and Kirkendall says he should go on Sally Jesse Raphael, which that's a 90s reference.
Yeah, which, like, okay, so I was trying to remember, like, what I knew about Sally Jesse Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, like, the Jerry Springer of the time?
I think it was, like, the Jerry Springer without the fighting.
Yeah, right, obviously. Jerry Springer, like, brought the fighting.
He brought the heat.
But, like, you know, like, is Ricky Lake part of that, too?
Yeah, Ricky Lake is a part of that. And Jenny Jones.
And Maury. At some point.
And Montel. I think...
Oh, motherfucking Montel.
Sipowitz and Simone go and pick up Shirley, who was on the other end of that phone call. She's dressed like she went out last night. There's a funny moment between her and Sipowitz, because Sipowitz says, is that my going to the store outfit? And she said, no, this was my... I was having fun last night, didn't know it was a legal outfit.
Yeah, she gives the sass right back.
She sasses. Pretty good. She out-sasses the Sip, and they ask her if she was hanging out with Wanda and Joanne, and she says, yes, they were dancing. She was dancing with another guy. They went off together and assumed that Wanda and Joanne were dancing. She also reveals that Wanda is a bit of a cheater. She's always, you know, getting that D all around town when her husband's not around.
With a famous face, Shirley is Sana Lathan.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the Blade movies.
I didn't see
Love and Basketball.
I knew I recognized her, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. And then when I went to the IMDb, it was all movies I hadn't seen. So I was,
yeah, she's in a lot of things.
I'm sure she was like she was somebody in something that I watched that I just cannot remember. But
she was also in what you probably watched. She was also in the reboot of The Twilight Zone on CBS.
Oh yeah,
she was in that.
She was in the episode with the camera. That she can... Okay.
Sure, dude. All I know is that she was in... she's been in a lot of shit.
She gives up that, you know, Wanda was cheating. And then when they reveal that she actually is dead with Joanne, she reveals that she was hanging out with a posse of Rastaman crack dealers.
Does she say that?
Yeah. Well, she says... She was running around with a posse of Rastamen, crack dealers from Brooklyn.
Okay. There's a comma.
There is a comma. No, she didn't. Not Rastamen crack dealers. I don't know why. That sounds like a punk band.
Rastamen, period. Some crack dealers from Brooklyn.
And she was mostly with a guy named Skilly, and says that she'll help them with where he lives. What I found funny is she said, oh, we were going down to the club, I forgot what it's called. Oh, what was the club called? It's not important. She's like, we were going to the club, that's on Avenue D, and I was like, yeah, these three ladies are going to Avenue D, if you know what I'm saying.
But everyone does that, like, the first time you ride the D train in New York, you're like, oh.
I'm riding that D train.
Take that D, you gotta ride that D, Kirk. You should know how to write that D, though. You're good at it. So just take the D here.
They run down what's going on with Fancy. It seems like Shirley is telling the truth, not giving him any trouble. They said they're probably going to have to raid on Skilly's place, and Russell...
But why?
I don't know why.
Did they have to raid Skilly's place?
Well, because he's a crack dealer, Kyle.
But Kirk, other than being a person who may have killed these two women only because, like, they were out dancing at a nightclub, that's the only, like, evidence they have. What would be, like, okay, next move, raiding his apartment?
Because the word crack was invoked. Once the word cracked gets involved in your investigation, you're allowed to raid.
Raid anything you want? Fair enough.
I think that's their justification. The weird part is Russell, but Fancy says, oh, Medavoy and Martinez are out on a dump job. And Simone says, oh, we'll get some help from anti-crime. And then Russell overhears and walks over and says, what's going on? And Fancy says, could you aid them on a raid? You know, Simone's not happy about it.
He's fine with it right then. He's not, like, jumping for joy, but there's no indication that he's, like, pissed about it. You know what I mean?
The next scene with them, they go, Sipowicz, Simone, Russell, and Kirkendall go to the house, and there's, like, a straight-up SWAT team already there for the raid.
So, again, to my point, what warranted that?
I don't know. I think it's just because they mentioned that they were drug dealers, they assume, but they probably should have had more than just her word that that was the case.
Sorry, it doesn't make any sense.
Especially when, after what happens right now happens, in the bathroom, Sipowicz is like, oh, I got Skilly's sheet, which means they didn't even get his sheet before this raid.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just, like, this whole thing is, hey, this lady said that she was hanging out with these two Rasta guys, one's named Skilly, that he sells drugs as well. That's it. Okay, we're going to go raid his house. And then on the way over there, then you go, oh, yeah, by the way, I have his rap sheet and everything. He's done wrong. I just don't see how it gets there.
When they roll up to the place, they ask the main SWAT guy, what do we got? And the SWAT guy says, you know, ropehead scumbags, which I didn't know. I don't know if that's like a slur, but it feels like one.
Oh, 100% is.
rope.
Because the way he said it, that's what I have written down here. That's one of the first things I wrote down. I was like, ropehead? Question mark.
Ropehead?
The 90s have taught me, or the late 90s, early 2000s have shown just the, like, imagination that went into racist...
slurs?
Terms? Yeah, racist slurs, nicknames, funny little, like, things.
Jabs.
Like, you know, when earlier in the episode, when Sipowicz talks about how, like, you rub your face, you wipe your hand across your face when you want to talk about, like, people of color. I never knew that. That was super interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
When he called that Indian lady a dothead, I've never heard that until I listened to that.
One thing we can say about racists, they like to innovate. You know, they don't like to stay bogged down with one thing or another.
Well, because they like to hide it, bro.
They got to innovate.
Okay, they got to stay on the fresh up and up.
So here's the thing that kind of bothers me about Simone's decision making. He sends the women to the back door alone.
Explain. I think we should break down everything and then discuss it.
Okay.
Because there's a lot here that shows that Simone's a straight asshole.
Simone sends the women to the back, and Kirkendall throws in the jab. I thought you were going to tell us to kick the door down. And then they break in. They start arresting some Rasta men. And one dude goes out the back door where Russell and Kirkendall are. And he pulls a gun and fires, and they shoot him and put him down.
Does he fire? I'm not saying they didn't have the right to shoot him.
I thought he
does. He fire?
I thought he did. I thought he fired first, but missed.
Okay, because I didn't watch it, like, today, so I don't remember. I don't have it, like, right in front of my brain. But I do remember him running out with the gun out, them saying freeze, him not, and then them shooting, which he had a gun out and he pointed it at them. I just don't remember him shooting. That's all.
I think he did. I mean, it's one of those things where the way the scene is, like, set up, he runs out, you see him pull his gun up, and they pull their gun up, and then it cuts to Simone and Sipowicz in the room. So you don't really know who did, but I think it implies that he shot first, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
Just wondering, that's all. Not that big a deal, you know?
I'll explain why I think he shot first in just a sec, but after that happens, Simone goes out to check. The ladies are all right. The other police detectives are all right. They're not just ladies. They have jobs. You know, they're obviously shaken up. They just murdered a man in the street because he pulled a gun on them. Well, it's not murder, then it's self-defense. Point is, Russell and Kirkendall, after that, are supporting each other in the bathroom, where it's kind of an odd conversation. Kirkendall says that they
get... Yeah, there's that weird thing where she goes, I'm gonna go take a walk.
I'm gonna go do paperwork.
One time around the block for me.
And then they, like... Then she gives her, like, a platonic arm hug. Or not arm hug, like an arm grab. And then here's where
Very weird arm grab.
Kirkendall goes to take a walk, and Russell comes out of the bathroom, and Simone decides to start an argument in the middle of the work day, which it seems like an opportune time, because she just, you know, witnessed a man dying.
Just shot at somebody.
Simone sets up the argument because he's upset that she forced herself onto this case when she is pregnant, and she, you know, quotes the book, which is not going to help the argument at all. I'm not saying it's her fault, I'm just saying that that's going to just perpetuate the argument, not squash it.
Why does that help the argument?
No, I'm just saying that clearly right now, just in terms of argument dynamics, Simone thinks, okay, you put yourself in harm's way when you didn't have to, when now you are pregnant. And when he says, you shouldn't have done that, her quoting the book isn't going to squash the argument. It's just going to perpetuate it. I'm not saying that she did anything wrong. I'm just saying that if she wanted to not make a scene in the middle of the squad, that wasn't the way to do it. Of course, she has got a lot on her mind. Because they're going to start arguing, basically. And Russell tells him, this is the end of this conversation, and Sipowicz can tell that something's up.
Or how about this? How about she's done nothing wrong up to this point? He started a fight at work. He was being unprofessional.
Yeah, absolutely.
All he was doing was telling him that I did everything by the book and to leave her the fuck alone.
I don't disagree with you. I just think that... it's not important, but I just think that if you're starting to have an argument at work and you want to not have an argument at work, coming back with a jab is not going to stop the argument. If you're going to have an argument at work...
I know, but break the whole thing down, right? Like, did she force her way in? Probably not.
Kind of. I mean, this is another one where we just straight disagree, I think. She's
doing her job. Didn't force her way in. She did her job.
Mm-hmm.
She even says, like, I had nothing to do. It's fine. He could have been smarter instead of sending her around back. He could have told her, like, hey, hang out in the front, both us, but behind all of the SWAT guys.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things he could have done differently, like, and he keeps talking about, like, oh, if you get hurt, like, motherfucker, what if you get hurt while you're working? Like, and that kid doesn't have a baby. That baby doesn't have a father. But that kid doesn't have a father, so that makes it bad. Like, that makes it different. That's just a stupid argument to me.
Let's continue, and then we'll fight it out towards the end, even after they resolve it in the episode. Simone goes to the bathroom, and Sipowicz comes in to let him know that Skilly doesn't have any violence in his rap sheet. Simone is too pissed to really listen. He says things, I would still like to spread his brains on the wall. Sipowicz makes the point, like, what would be the point of him murdering a woman that he's been sleeping with in the home of a rival drug dealer? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't help them out, doesn't help him out, especially if he's, like, still wants to be a drug dealer. He doesn't want all that, like, pressure on him.
When they walk in, Sipowicz tells Simone, I should probably take the aggressive approach, and they go get Skilly, and they pull him out of the cage, and Sipowicz says something that, like, I thought was pretty hard, where he said, sit straight like the school you never attended.
That one was alright.
They also reveal his name is Carlton McIntosh, and he goes by Skilly, and I'm like, that's an interesting nickname for Carlton McIntosh. He also then says, back off, you bumba clot, which is, I think I'm going to start using that.
Okay, Chet Hanks. I don't think you can, okay?
What? It's just a word?
I don't think you can. I think it's like a meaning in, like, Jamaican culture. Like, I don't think you can just start using
it. I can't just use it? Even if I use my own accent, Kyle? I can't call people bomba clats?
Whatever, dude.
I can't call people at work bomba clats.
You can call anyone anything you want.
He threatens to curse Sipowicz, and Sipowicz responds with, "Curse away, I've been cursed by the best."
Oh, yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. I thought that one was a little funny, come get it.
He stays silent throughout basically the whole thing. They ask if he's a statue, and they hit him in the face. Or not the face, they hit him in the back of the head. He says, "I am a statue, the Statue of Liberty." Sorry, I shouldn't have said it with an accent.
You should. Okay, Chet Hayes, or Chet Hank, or whoever I'm talking to, cut it out. Your dad's not Tom Hanks. Okay? You can't be doing this shit.
He says, "I'm the Statue of Liberty," and Sipowicz has another great line where he's like, "Is that supposed to be a comment on your rights? And that it's like, you'll be taking a trip to an island very close to there, Rikers Island, where you can enjoy the, I mean, the line's written much better, and I didn't write the whole thing, because I didn't have space."
No. It's like Shakespeare coming out of you. Keep doing it.
Oh, shut up. He says he has the breath of a street dog, and Sipowicz says, "You ever wash these pigtails?" And then there's a reference to Cool Runnings, which is awesome, where he's like, I think he's one of those morons from that bobsled movie.
Okay, if we're going to talk about this now, what did Cool Runnings do to NYPD Blue?
I think Cool Runnings was just very popular at the time.
I know, but I felt like, I guess I didn't write down like the note good enough, but like I feel like they came hard at Cool Runnings for some reason.
I think it was almost like a South Park thing where they were doing an episode, they found an episode with Jamaicans, and they were like, "We should put in a line about Cool Runnings because that's a popular movie right now."
Fair enough. Feel the rhythm.
Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time. Cool Runnings. Look, I may say that all the time when I'm getting ready to do something that's going to require some focus and work. I also like to say, "Seika, you dead?" "Yeah, man." Anyway, Skilly, it couldn't have been the person who murdered the two women because he has an alibi in Baltimore. And they try to stress that he better give some kind of information because he's going to prison for attempted murder of cops.
No, what would have been really cool is if somehow the same actor had the same character in The Wire. And you could have, like, a crossover episode.
Years later.
That would have been funny.
Sipowicz and Simone talk in the bathroom. After that, Sipowicz jokes about yelling at Russell, saying that's what I like to do when people who I love are in danger, just scream at them.
It's kind of funny that Sipowicz is giving advice.
He also says, like, he said any girl I had a crush on, it would always come to a physical blow. Which is hilarious. Ha ha ha, hitting women.
Well, he's just kidding, Kirk. Locker room talk.
Sipowicz is also sniffing out that something else may be going on, but Simone doesn't want to come out and say it.
And he won't give him the dirt.
Won't give him the deets. Simone shows back up to the apartment he shares with Russell. She offers some overdone pasta.
That's such a random, like, little note about, like, their dinner.
And then they start their argument again. With the same beats, you shouldn't have forced your way on. That's how it works. I'm on the job. And he's like, "You're going to quote the book at me." And he's like, "If that's how it's going to be, why don't you take down the door?" And then she reminds him, "Hey, you kind of should be supporting me right now. I did shoot a guy today." And then he like kind of realizes like, "Oh, I'm kind of being a dick." And then just sits with her and apologizes while she cries. The next scene, Sipowicz comes in and complains about the coats. Because people in anti-crime are using their coat rack, because for some odd reason they don't have their own. He then asks about Russell, and Simone gives the all clear and thanks him for his concern and advice. And then Sipowicz and Simone get Martin, what is it, Livingstone? The husband of the DOA, who is also a drug dealer, and he comes in with his lawyer. And from
another famous face, he plays...
I did not know this.
He plays, I forget the actor's name, and I forget the character's name, but he plays...
I forget the show or television.
It's in 6 Feet Under. Who's the guy from Dexter? What's his face?
C. Thomas Howell? No, that's not his name.
No, not at all. I was going to say something else, and mine would have been better than your stupid guess.
Isn't it Michael C. Hall?
Are you talking about the fucker from Gilligan's Island? Are you talking about Gilligan's Island when I'm talking about Dexter? What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't think C. Thomas Howell was on Gilligan's Island.
Anyways,
I need to look up who
Michael C. Hall's character in 6 Feet Under. That's the guy that Martin Livingstone plays his boyfriend in the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not. I mean, I did not know.
Plays like a love interest, like person in the show. It's really interesting.
Okay, C. Thomas Howell was definitely not on.
I don't even think C. Thomas Howell lived to see Michael C. Hall born.
First off, C. Thomas Howell was very popular in the 80s. He's 53 right now. He was in The Outsiders. He was in Soul Man. You know, a movie where a white guy was in blackface to get into college. Red Dawn, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, The Hitcher. He was also in The Amazing Spider-Man. Anyway, C. Thomas Howell. Basically, when they bring in Martin, Sipowicz's plan is to annoy him into giving him the truth. Because they ask him straight out, and he's like, I don't know, man. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, well, he doesn't have cops, dude. He's a drug dealer.
And Sipowicz tries to annoy him, basically saying, like, look, if you don't give a fuck about your wife or your money, we'll go home and sleep, and we won't give a shit. And he's like, I cared about my wife. And Sipowicz just goes, balls! And I thought that was really funny. Simone gets him to bite when he mentions that she's been running around with some Rasta men fucking him. Sipowicz gets on top of it with like, oh, you thought she was practicing your favorite recipes while you were gone all that time? And then basically Martin goes, how about this? I'll give you the information if you give me the names of those Rasta guys. Which is kind of like...
And they do it!
Well, they only do it because they know they're going to prison. But they'll probably get murdered in prison if he's a drug dealer.
Why are the Rasta guys going to prison?
Because they're getting charged with attempted murder.
On who?
On the police officers. Because the guy ran out and I believe shot first. That's why I think he shot first.
Or because they searched his apartment for what reason?
Look, Kyle, I'm not saying that there's justice in what happened here. I'm just saying that that's what they're doing. They're saying because he threw because one of those guys threw a shot at a police officer, all of those guys are going to go to prison for attempted murder on a cop. I don't know why all of those guys, but that's how it's going, I guess.
I don't know. I have a feeling when, like, a defense attorney gets all of the, like, info and then sees that, like, oh, wait, why did we search his apartment? Oh, you had no probable cause? Weird. Did they have a warrant?
I mean, maybe. That's assuming that the defense attorney has the time to really look at their case rather than just a plea factory. I understand that there's a sense of injustice for these fictional characters in this fictional situation.
No, what I'm saying is, like, I'm hoping to God that my real police department isn't just being like, oh, you want the names of two dudes that you're going to try to murder? Yeah, cool, here.
Well, they do agree to it, which is hilarious. They're like, yeah, we'll give you those names if you give who killed your wife.
And then he says it's that half AF word, Ronald.
He says it's that snake half a bundle of sticks, Ronald. And he also says that Big Rick did the killing. I think this guy was a pretty good actor, just by the rhythm of how he spoke. Because I really liked how, like, there was a really ineffective white lawyer next to him. Who was like, I think we should talk about this. And he goes,
yeah,
shut your mouth.
I thought that was really funny. But it also helped show that his character and how his, and that, like, he is kind of a big deal. Like, he's gonna still do whatever he wants, you know?
I did want to mention, there's, like, a bunch of different post-dubbing on this. Like, there's a bunch of it. And one of them is when he, after he says that snake half a blank Ronald, there's another line that's, like, shoved in there really quick where he goes, my wife let him live upstairs. My wife let him live upstairs. Like, it seems, like, really, really quick. And then Sipowicz says, I'm so glad to hear you say that. And I think it's because they were worried people wouldn't remember who Ronald was.
Yeah, or, like, they didn't explain earlier why Ronald was even there.
Yeah, they feel like they didn't explain it well enough. Because he mentioned it at the beginning of the episode. He's like, yeah, they let me live upstairs. I was a friend. And like, I think they just had to throw that in there. The next scene with them, Sipowicz and Simone got Ronald, who's crying. Says he didn't know Big Rick was going to kill him. He mentioned the safe to him, and Big Rick wouldn't let it go. Wanda let him in because they assumed they were friends. And then he tied him up and took him to the basement. But he had no idea that he was going to kill him. And then Sipowicz is like, well, Ronald, maybe it's because Big Rick knew Wanda would know who robbed them. And she would tell her husband, Martin. And he's like, I couldn't do that myself. And he's like, yeah, well, you're the sensitive type.
Is that a shot?
Yeah. I mean, what sucks is this guy is, like, crying and admitting to them. And they have, like, nothing but contempt for him. And when he goes to write it down, they give him a pen. And I think Sipowicz says, I bet you have excellent penmanship. Which is like, okay, that's an odd dig.
Yeah, that is an odd dig.
I bet you have excellent
penmanship. So what? Gay people write nice?
I bet you're...
Look at that homo over there. Bet you has great calligraphy skills.
I bet you he's writing all types of shit on that stationery.
I bet you could never be a doctor because you're going to read his prescription.
Sipowicz and Simone bring in Big Rick, and Sipowicz and Fancy have a miscommunication where Sipowicz says, that's Big Rick, and Fancy says, does he drive a truck? And Sipowicz is like, why would he drive a truck? He's like, isn't that some type of a famous truck driver, Big Rick? And he's like, oh, I thought you said Big Rig. And then they just kind of stare at each other. And he's like, well, this is a good waste of about 20, 30 seconds.
Okay, but there's a lot of conversations like that.
It's like, okay.
Throughout this whole episode, because like you even mentioned it earlier, Sipowicz has like a random conversation, but there's also like Metavoy has a random conversation later when they're sitting in the car about some fat guy walking around.
Oh yeah,
A random conversation. Like there's just a bunch of random, small conversations throughout this whole episode, and I don't know why or what they were trying to do.
Yeah, it is true. It's very strange. When they get Big Rick into the room, they ask him why he's Big Rick, and he says, well, he has a cousin named Rick, so they call him Big Rick, and the other guy Rick. And Sipowicz asks, well, what would you like to be called? And he's like, you can call me Smokey Robinson and the Miracles for all that matters to me. And he's like, well, Smokey, Ronald threw up all over you, and says, and they were killed execution style, which means the prosecutor's going to say that you've done this before. And we found the weapon in your apartment, which is usually a good idea to throw that away, even though it might be considered wasteful. And then he makes a comment where he says, that Kraut moron on that late night show, who's he talking about?
Same thing.
Like, I don't remember any specifically German late night talk show hosts.
Oh, was Cronkite?
Maybe.
But he did news. He didn't do late night talk shows.
So yeah, I did not know.
Like, I don't know any, like, around that time, the only talk show host was it Carson still?
Is he German?
Because it's not Letterman.
No.
And it's not Leno. It's
definitely not Leno. I don't know. I don't know what he meant, but I mean, I'm sure someone else who's older than us might know, but I don't know. Big Rick says that he had to kill them because they saw him. Sipowicz says, I knew there had to be a reason. And then he tells them where the money is and says, I want to use that money for a lawyer. And Sipowicz says, if they try to paint you out as a mastermind at the trial, you can use what happened now as your defense. So that,
I mean, at least he tried, though. Like, at least he tried.
Yeah, he really swang for the fences. I mean, after that, the last thing is Russell and Kirkendall are talking about the day. And Russell asks about the pregnancy. And, you know, Kirkendall gives her some advice and says, like, you know, it'll be the best thing ever. You'll have some bumps, but it'll all be worth it. Gives her a kiss on the cheek. But I think even Kirkendall is smelling that something's going on, because Russell said that Simone kind of freaked out on her. Jill kind of saves it by saying, you know, just in worried about you generally.
Yeah, boys will be boys.
Boys will be boys, you know. That's female locker room talk, you know, forgiving men for their actions. So the other case is Martinez and Medavoy, and I'm going to run through it quick because it's not really that interesting at all.
Not at all.
Basically, they get a dump job, and it's like a 19-year-old woman in the trash of a building. Medavoy and Martinez are taking pictures. Martinez is talking to a woman on the street who found her, and she has a poodle. And basically, the only slightly interesting thing that happens there is Martinez says that if he ever becomes mayor, he's going to put in a law that bans poodles from the city. And Medavoy says, that would be a discriminatory statute. And it's like, fucking Medavoy, just enjoy the conversation.
But I'd support it, is what he said.
Then after that, they get the...
Why does he hate dogs?
I think he just hates poodles. Because poodles bark.
Like, I know why Metavoy hates dogs, because he's a bitch. But why does Martinez hate dogs?
Oh, man, the Metavoy hate is perfect for the story that's about to occur. They get the information that the DOA is a 19-year-old Marianne from Decatur.
Decatur!
And Martinez says they'll just have Decatur PD notify the family. Maybe they know somebody on Decatur's job. And then Metavoy asks, hey, Martinez, it looks like your back's okay. Are you feeling some physical discomfort, James? Because he's a weirdo, and that's how he talks.
Yeah, he always fucking calls him James.
And then he says, yeah, I threw out my back. And then he said, domestically. And then Metavoy gives him a face like, what do you mean? Then,
well, also remember, he has to say domestically because Metavoy won't leave it the fuck alone.
And Metavoy goes and sits back down and shoots Martinez a look like, what does he mean by domestically? Or, I know what you mean, but that's crazy. Because she had some callers for solicitation, so they're like, let's go talk to some prostitutes. Maybe they know who she is.
Yeah, maybe they recognize her on the way.
So they, you know, they roll up on some hookers, and they bring out a picture of the DOA. And one of them recognizes her immediately and said, oh yeah, she had a John the night of the death. I could pick him out. She mentions that if she goes with him, that she'll lose money. And Martina says, I'm sure we can work something out, some type of compensation. If you're that hooker, like, do you think for half a minute, like, oh, man, I'm going to have to blow these cops?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're thinking like that. I feel like, ugh, I don't know.
Because the way he said, we can work something out, some type of compensation, and then smiles, I was like, okay, dude. That's a little...
Yeah, but that compensation, but, like, taking his dick isn't compensation for missing the day's work, you know what I mean?
I honestly thought they'd pay her and then, in a world where horrible, horrible, terrible things happen, I just figured she could think in the back of her mind, like, oh, great, they're going to give me money and then they're going to expect something out of me after we get to the end of this, because I mentioned that I need some type of compensation. The point is, they don't do that because they're good, nice dudes, but...
Well, what they could have done is if they both were like, nah, we don't want to go... They could have just fucked with them the rest of the day, like, kept a cop around the whole time so they couldn't make money.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
They were basically telling them both, like, no, we don't want to help you because we're going to go commit a crime. however you agree with it or not, like, that's what they basically said. They were like, no, we don't want to help you solve this murder case because I have to go make money in an illegal way. If they, like, they could have just been like, all right, cool, well, I'm going to have a... police unit just sit on this corner the whole day and follow you around.
Because, yeah, when they drove up, suddenly all the Johns drove away. They did show that.
Like, I'm just going to have them constantly circling this block or, like, walking where you're walking, like, and just, like, fucking with their day. Like, they could have done that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think so. I don't think James is trying to get, like, a side blow. And I don't think the hooker thought that either.
A side blow. Yeah, even when they came up to the prostitutes, they were like, excuse me, can I talk to you? And they're like, hey, man, I'm working. And they're like, yeah, so were we.
Which, again, aren't they, like, they're not allowed to do that.
What do you mean they're not, like, allowed to do that?
If you walk up to a drug dealer, and he's sitting there with drugs, and you're like, hey, can I talk to you? And the drug dealer's like, nah, man, I'm working. The cop wouldn't then just go like, yeah, me too, and have a friendly conversation with them. Like,
well, I think because the rules about... prosecuting prostitution is like you have to get them to agree to take money for acts explicitly. I think, like, even the prostitutes know, like, they don't have anything unless they actually are in the car taking money for a specific thing. So they're like, if they just say, hey, I'm working here, you know, I mean, it's just whatever dialogue. It was just to move the story along. But I get what you're saying, but they're not going to do anything to them unless they catch them in the middle of the act.
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting.
So next scene, they're in a car together, you know, palling around, and Metavoy says, hey, you want a fat-free bagel? And
would you say that they were in Palomino?
Yes. Yes, congrats on that one.
Yeah, here goes Metavoy fat-shaming someone while he's a fat fuck himself.
And then a guy comes down the stairs, and Martinez is like, that's the guy who needs a fat-free bagel. And they go hardcore on this guy, because Metaboy's like, no, he needs something like stomach stapling or jaw wiring. And it's like, Jesus Christ, dude. Like, let him live.
He unleashes on this poor dude who's just walking.
The prostitute points out a specific guy, and they go to pick him up, and he asks, am I under arrest? It's important to note, he says, am I under arrest? And Metaboy goes, should you be? But it's also important to note that this is the same exact guy that when they were looking at the DOA, the camera panned to him and zoomed on him and put him in focus.
Yeah.
Almost to be like, this guy's going to be important later. I haven't seen this show do that very often, where they're like, this guy's going to be important later, and just camera.
Yeah, and what was also funny about that pan and zoom movement is there was no one else on the street.
Other than the lady with the dog, yeah. There's nobody else.
Yeah, it was just him, though. Like, and she said, like, there he is. Like, you should have been able to spot it, like, no problem. Like, it was just, it's kind of funny.
Okay, so they bring that guy back to the house, and then Metaboy mentions to Fancy that their case may have taken a stinky turn because the last guy with this prostitute was the commissioner of traffic.
Yeah.
Martinez is still dealing with his bad back, which as somebody who had some back problems and still continues to have slight back problems here and there, I understand his pain, and it's difficult to find a comfortable way to stand and or sit. And they interview this guy who is very resistant to the entire thing, but never calling a lawyer. He even says, like, can you, because Metaboy asks about his back, and he's like, could you get his medical history after I'm released? And he says, are you sure you're going to be released? My favorite part of this whole thing, Martinez goes, do you frequent prostitutes? And the guy goes, why? And Martinez goes, why? Question. Like, obviously we're asking the question for a reason, and that answer kind of implies you do. They kind of go at him until he admits that, yeah, I saw her, but she went into the bathroom, had an OD, and, you know, the only thing I could think of was to throw her body out the window onto the trash.
Yeah, I mean, I looked outside, saw a huge trash bin, and was like, fuck it, let's do it.
Let's see, what can I do with this human that died? Put her in the trash. Well, it just sucks that Always Sunny hasn't occurred yet, because he could have just put her in the hallway and then called the cops. And then he has the fucking nuts. He has the balls to be like, hey, the worst you could charge me is with a health code.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he gets real confident about it.
Here is where there's a whole lot of dubbing, and I don't know if you noticed it, but there's a lot of dubbing in this scene. Well, first off, Martinez has to take this moment to complain about a light to the deputy commissioner of traffic, which seems to be losing sight of why they're there.
Oh my god, that whole light complaint, it reminded me of like a white lady.
He was embracing his inner Karen for a minute. Metaboy gets him back on track. But later, Martinez is like, well, we can charge you with a health code assuming that we like your version of events and we believe you. He's like, how could I have injected her with drugs? I don't know how to do that. Maybe you do. And then Martinez says, hey, my brother died like that. It didn't forfeit him being human. And then
that whole thing's dubbed, right?
I think so. I think, like, every single line after Martinez says, well, that's if we believe your side of the story. I think everything Martinez says is dubbed besides, I think you broke my back, Greg.
Yeah.
Because I think they rewrote that whole scene, but I'm not sure why. Because you can tell it's, like, not even the same tone. It doesn't seem to have the same rhythm.
Yeah, it's cut awkwardly.
Basically, they just wanted to have Martinez get angry enough so that Metaboy tries to restrain him, and then he hurts his back, and he has to get carted off on a stretcher.
Yeah, Metaboy acts like a little baby.
So, yeah, Martinez has this argument with the commissioner, because the commissioner, like, basically says, I don't care how your junkie brother died, and Martinez gets put into a chair by Metaboy, and then says, I think you broke my back, Greg. Metaboy then freaks the fuck out as they bring in the paramedics. They ask about it. They're like, oh, well, he's been saying it's been hurting all day, right, Greg? And then Greg's like, well, what do you mean? And then Sipowicz is like, yeah, you've been telling us all day that he's been saying his back hurts. And then my favorite part of the entire episode They go, well, what did he say happened? He's like, oh, he says that he hurt his back domestically, and everyone got quiet. And then Medavoy took it upon himself to say, well, okay, what I think happened is because Gina's moved along in her pregnancy, Martinez tried fucking her in a weird way, and he threw his back out.
Jesus.
Because what he says is, to all of the co-workers in their office, I think he got into an unfamiliar type connubial position. He said that to all of his coworkers. Like, you know, he started fucking her weird because she's preggers. So, like, he threw out his back.
Uh-huh.
And then even Kirkendall was like, oh, okay. Like, we're done talking about this. That's what I love about Medavoy. He does not know when to just edit his own voice. And when he just was like, look, he got into some weird sex position, threw out his back, and then I fucked him right now by trying to hold him back. They put him on a stretcher, and Medavoy continues to freak out, even though everyone's like, that's just a precaution, Greg.
Why does he go to the hospital with him?
Because they're partners, and Medavoy's a little bit of a girl, and he doesn't have any family to go home to him, because as you remember, he left them to bang a super busty fucking blonde woman, and then she left. So he doesn't.
Yeah, because he was being a doucher.
And then he started a family for some lesbians, and one of them died, and the other one just doesn't see him again. He really, you know, he starts families, but he doesn't finish them. So he has to hang out with Martinez. And Martinez tells them to not tell Gina. He doesn't want her to freak out and wants to give her the information himself.
Do you think that's weird?
No. I would want to do that too. Especially because now that I've had like crazy back pain and I figured out what it is, I wouldn't want them to tell my significant other that I went to the hospital with it. I would want a doctor to tell me what needs to happen to make it better before I talk to them. But that's just me. I don't know.
Okay. Fair enough.
Also, she's pregnant, so you don't want her to, like, freak out and run down while pregnant, and I think it was a good decision. The end of the episode, another episode with crazy Naomi from Australia. Simone comes into the break room to get some water, and Naomi is crying in there. About halfway through this episode, she has a moment with Fancy. She lets Fancy know where Medavoy and Martinez are, and then she lets him know that she's dealing with some personal complications that are trying to flatten her like a cartoon character, and then she refers to Roger Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was also very cool.
Great movie.
Super great. Simone gets caught with Naomi because he tries to get some water, and you can tell he's like, he got trapped by it because he clearly did not want to have that conversation. Her landlord turned her into INS because, if you remember, Naomi is not from the South, from Durham, North Carolina. She is from Canberra,
Australia,
and
down under, mate.
Put another shrimp on the Barbie. She
out back,
which is weird because why would you put shrimp on dolls? Her landlord turned her into INS when he figured out that she was from Australia and had forged documents. Simone's like, "Yeah, what an asshole!" And she goes, "Bloody oath, he's an asshole," which I thought was pretty cool. She has like a pretty insightful couple minute talk about like who people are versus what they're called, and how like, do we really have to be bound by who we are by name? Can't we choose who we are? And she admires Simone for clearly loving Russell and having that like kind of center him and ground him. And it's like, yeah, that's all well and good, but why couldn't you just be a cop in Australia? Like, why couldn't you just live out your dreams in Australia? I don't understand.
I don't know, man. Some people just, like, want to come here. I mean, not right now, but...
Right now, we're like Disneyland after someone dies.
What? Would they do nothing?
Yeah, basically. They shut down the ride for a couple weeks and announce some new thing. Naomi reveals that she's not even Naomi Reynolds of Canberra. She changed that name as well, so she ain't nobody that she said she is. She tells Simone like she just wants to live her dream, and she sees the love that he has for Russell and how that keeps him. he basically uses that crazy to leave her by saying, I kind of want to see her right now, so can I leave?
Can I go?
Can I leave now? And she says, thank you for talking to me. And he's like, yeah, cool, peace. And just, like, gets out of there as soon as possible, and the episode ends. I don't know if this is the last time we see Naomi, but if it is, it's been a long, strange trip.
And I'm not gonna miss it.
Yeah, especially because, like, I always forgot about Naomi every time they mention PAAs, and I think it's because her story is so bonkers that I just, like...
Well, it's just like right now, she's Naomi from fucking Durham. She's Naomi from Cambridge. Oh, wait, that's not true. That's all that's made up. So she has a different name. She wants to some reason, like, she doesn't want to be a detective. She doesn't want to be, like, a commissioner. She just wants to be a fucking beat cop.
And she doesn't want to arrest kangaroos. She wants to arrest New Yorkers.
New Yorkers. And so she left everything behind for this.
Yeah. And I don't understand. I don't.
Basically, has committed like numerous felonies
just to
be a police officer.
Just to try and be a police officer in New York.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyway, you got anything left for this episode? I found it kind of like whatever. I didn't think it was the best. It just had very funny moments, like when Medavoy was talking about Martinez's fucking habits to the entire office.
Yeah, I felt like this episode was like, let's belittle women for working while they're pregnant, and then just a bunch of random, like, small conversations that didn't make any sense.
I will say, just to put a cap on it, I do think Simone was wrong in how he handled the situation.
Oh, you think?
Completely. I don't think he should have told the women to go to the back of the building by themselves, if he was really concerned for them. I don't think it was a good idea to argue in the middle of the squad room.
Well, I think...
Yeah, I think he just kind of overreacted, but I think he did need to express his concerns. He just did it the completely wrong way.
Okay, so, like, this whole episode is, like, proof, or, like...
Proof positive.
Proof, or, like, just a another supporting paragraph for the topic that is, like, detectives in the same squad being married. Why it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Like, this is absolutely just another, more evidence you can add to why it's a horrible idea.
It's something that obviously should be, like, a rule, and yet everybody on this show fucks somebody that's related to their office. Except for, like, Fancy. Like, everybody bones within the office.
Yeah, but, dude, there's no way that they could have Fancy be in charge and at the same time be, like, a dude who's just smashing, you know what I mean?
A dude that's just smashing.
No way they could.
You mean playing Super Smash Brothers? Anyway.
Yeah, get on them sticks.
Get on... who's his main? I'm pretty sure it's Kirby. He seems like a Kirby guy. Anyway.
He's like the Falcon guy, dude.
Oh, Captain Falcon? Oh, that'd be fancy as Captain Falcon.
I don't know. I just think Simone was a douche the whole time.
Yeah, he was pretty douchey. I think he overreacted... But he should have said something, but he just should have been more constructive. If I could be a marriage counselor about it.
If Russell could do it again, do you think she would tell him so soon?
No. I think she would have told him after she got a confirmation.
Yeah, I feel like she would wait and then tell him after, like, a doctor's appointment, yeah.
Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, where you find your podcasts, also Stitcher. We're on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast, on Twitter at AstroBrosPod, where mostly announcing when new episodes are coming out. Right now, the schedule is every other Tuesday, and of course, NYPD Blue is no longer on Amazon, it is only on Hulu. That's NYPD Blue Balls. Keep watching NYPD Blue.
Oh, shit. We haven't finished yet.
No, we haven't. Laters. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Always available on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and where you find a podcast. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There's also What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon. I believe that is 99 cents.
thank you again for listening. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how the show gets seen, and hopefully people listen to the show. But more importantly, keep watching NYPD Blue, which is on Hulu and not on Amazon. It's also on DVD in some countries and some areas, but look out for it on Hulu. Keep your hands washed, keep your face covered, keep distance from other people except people in your home. Be safe, have a good one. Just stay inside, watch NYPD Blue.